Welcome to a world without water. The land that stretches before you now is a nuclear desert. Civilization scrapes by in its rare oases, and in the wastelands between, marauders on modified vehicles and irradiated monsters battle for the rare water that falls from the sky. The civs themselves are run by rival gangs, ruled with an iron fist. Life here is short and difficult, defined by radiation poisoning and sun sickness. The only thing worse than surviving here is dying here. But hey, it's home, and you're not going down without a fight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tabletop Tavern Campaign 3 Wastelands. We're so happy to have you here. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jenny. I will be your game master now and forever, so get used to it. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm going to allow my beautiful, wonderful, talented players to name and pronoun themselves for all of you, and also introduce you to their characters. Starting with the beautiful, the talented, I'm not going to introduce her because that would spoil it.
Hi everyone, I'm Victoria. My pronouns are she, her. I'm playing Glimmer this season, and her pronouns are also she, her.
Hi, my name is Stacy. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm going to be playing Tess, T-E-S-S, and her pronouns are going to be she, her.
Hi. I'm Pip. I use they, them, and I play Adrastos, who also uses they, them.
Hi, I'm Doe. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm playing Hallie this season, whose pronouns are also she, her.
Hi, I'm Cam. My pronouns are they, them, and I am playing B, whose pronouns are she, they, she.
Hell yeah. One time I knew someone who had never met someone who used multiple pronouns before, and his only question was like, do you have to use them in that order? Which I just found terribly endearing.
Like, that's sweet.
As like a genuine question to just be like, do I have to remember the order to use them in? Which was just adorable. Anyways.
Like, no, bestie.
It's... Now that I've given a wonderful personal story, as all podcasts need to start with, instead of what you actually came here for, are y'all ready to head into the wastelands?
I've been waiting for this one.
Lego. All right. Welcome to a world without water. The world as you know it, as you've always known it, is a nuclear desert. Civilization scrapes by at the rare oases. In the wastelands between, marauders on modified vehicles and radiated monsters battle for the rare water that falls from the sky. The civs themselves are run by rival gangs, ruled with an iron fist. To break the arbitrary and capricious rules here means banishment, remedied only by returning with safe, clean water. No one has ever returned from these forced pilgrimages. Life here is short and difficult, defined by radiation poisoning and sun sickness. There are no plants, no shade, and no safety. Life is defined by its misery. The only thing worse than surviving here is dying here. But hey, it's home, and you're not going down without a fight. Welcome to the wastelands. We begin our story in the eastern oasis, far across the sun-baked plains of the waste, deep within cactus territory. Within the oasis's high steel walls made of scuffed metal, twisted and warped by heat of dividing atoms, a woman walks. She's of medium height, pale skin, sunburned by the oppressive light overhead. Her blonde hair tied up into a nondescript bun, covered by a thin hood. She walks down an alley, then another, following strange signs carved into the metal around her until she stops before a heavy door. Glimmer, you know that this is the entrance to the Syndicate's underground casino. The man you're looking for is not here, but someone who supposedly knows his location. is. The only problem is that they don't let outsiders in. To get in, you have to know someone. And for the first time in a very long time, you know no one in this city. A window in the steel door before you slides open, and two bloodshot green eyes stare into yours, looking down at Vic. Do you want to describe your character for us?
Yeah. So Glimmer is, you did a beautiful job describing her. She's got pale skin that's kind of like in a perpetual state of sunburn. She doesn't naturally freckle all that much, but you know when you have pale skin and you kind of are in the sun way too much, so you do freckle. It's just like pepperings of freckles over her skin. She is wearing it's almost linen. It's a nondescript kind of beige looking fabric, almost like a cape that goes down to about her knees. It's kind of like flung over her shoulders and is mostly on her back. The hood, now that she's come up to this building, has come down, and you can see that she's got like her blonde hair like just piled on her head, and a pair of goggles up there that, you know, that when she's running around the desert, she's probably got them on. And if you look really hard, you can kind of see the lines of windburn and sunburn around where she has those goggles. She's wearing a tattered gray dress. Clothing here is kind of tattered. Society's not in like the greatest spot. So I personally feel like, and Jenny, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I have envisioned it is like, it's kind of hard to make fabric in a nuclear wasteland. And so,
yeah, there's no plants. It's a little bit unclear what you make it out of.
Yeah. So I feel like clothing is kind of just like pieced together and ripped apart and made from clothing that has managed to be like scrounged and like found. Right. And so she's wearing this like gray mini patchwork dress that probably has shorts underneath or something to that effect. And then a pair of like tall, like utility combat boots that kind of lace up the center. She's curvaceous. And one thing that's important to note is that one of her arms is robotic.
As a human, Glimmer, it's definitely not uncommon for people to have sort of tech modifications. Life out here is pretty hard. And frankly, radiation just isn't good for anybody. Most people alive are going to sort of be suffering the adverse effects of living in such a sort of a horrific wasteland. These two eyes stare down at you, sort of watering in the sort of evening light of the oasis. There is no sun above you right now, but there are never any clouds in the sky here. And so the moon and its shattered fragments that surround it illuminates everything around you, as does sort of the neon pulsing lights of the oasis. Can I help you?
I'd like to come in.
And I'd like to not piss and shit in a bucket, but, you know, they don't call me Bucket Dan for no reason.
When did that nickname come about?
The time that I first shit and piss in a bucket.
You know there are other options, right?
Maybe for you, Miss High Roller. Now, how can I help you?
I would like to spend some of my money.
You got money?
Some.
How much?
That's a really good question. Enough to be able to bet.
But do you have enough to be able to lose?
Of course.
Can you roll me a persuasion check, please?
All right. Let's give that a little gore. That is a 15.
Glimmer, this person's eyes stare at you from the gap in the steel and then pull back very suddenly, and a grubby, sort of hairy hand reaches out towards you. The fingernails are gnawed short. There's dirt in every last wrinkle of the palm. And the voice goes, I'll let you in for 25 credits.
Can I I guess, insight and see if he's like bullshitting?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. It's not the greatest role of all time. That's a 9.
I mean, the guy pisses and shits in a bucket. You're pretty certain that he could use the money. And you're pretty sure that, like, honestly, this guy doesn't have that much to lose. He doesn't seem to be pretty, like, very high on the syndicate's ladder here.
Yeah.
You figure that if you give him 25 credits, he'll probably let you in. And if not, I mean, his hand's out here. You can always break some wrists.
True. Okay. So I hand him 25 credits.
The hand disappears into the door. You can hear him mumbling to himself. Oh, yeah. And then the door swings open. A man with like a thick white beard and like patches of hair on his head. It sort of looks like his hair is falling out in clumps. Looks at you and goes, just down the stairs over there. And as you step into this room, you are hit with just like the most powerful aroma of like human feces and urine you've ever smelled in your entire life.
Lovely. Glimmer, his name was Bucket Dan, right?
Bucket Dan.
Okay. Yeah. Glimmer goes, thanks so much, Dan.
His eyes get a little watery and he goes, nobody's called me that in 25 years.
Well, I think they should start. And then I head down the stairs.
Glimmer, you begin to head down the stairs. You can hear throbbing, pulsing music as you go further and further into the literal underground of the oasis. Down here, the air is actually cool. Up above ground, it never gets cooler than about 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And I'd love to do the math for you, but I'm thinking like 37 Celsius.
That's 90 is less than 37, but I also know 90 is hot as hell. I can connect those dots. Yeah.
So at night, it reaches about 90, 95 degrees Fahrenheit. That's as cool as the above ground ever gets. But here in the underground, it's a comfortable temperature. You find yourself able to sort of shed your cloak and sort of put it away so you can move a little bit easier. And you step into the underground syndicate casino. Now, this is basically a giant room. Mm-hmm. One end to the other, probably horizontally, 4,000 or 5,000 feet.
Wow.
Across from you, 2,000. The walls are lined with sort of just tables upon tables of people playing cards. In the center of the room, the focal piece of the room, is this giant arena. Closer to a coliseum than to your typical boxing ring. You know that here they stage the living fights that are often fought to the death between opponents, where the richest people in all of the oases will come to bet on who dies first. And the person you're looking for likely isn't in this room at all, but instead at the high roller's table on the sort of mounted, quasi-levitating, glass-paneled room above, overlooking the entire casino, where you can see a velvet draped table and 5 or 6 people seated around it, being waited on by sort of scruffy-looking scavenger types. Hand and foot. You know that you have to get up there, but you're not sure how.
And there are guards posted. Like, can I roll perception?
Yeah, roll perception.
Okay. That is a 12.
All right, with the 12, you look around the room. It's dimly lit here. Electricity is sort of, it's a luxury. So most of these places are lit by more sort of candles or lanterns with some kind of flame within them. The only place that's actually fully lit up is that sort of high rollers area. But you do see a few syndicate types hanging around, appearing to sort of, they're less focused on who's here and more focused on whether or not they're cheating. Mm-hmm. You also know that the Syndicate is, it's an up-and-coming gang, sure, but it's certainly no Cactus Gang, and it's definitely not the Wynn family, you know, back where you grew up in the North Oasis. Nothing that intense. You're pretty sure that if you just put on the correct airs and held your head up high, you could make it to the High Rollers area with no questions asked.
Yeah, and I think given that knowledge, that's probably what Glimmer tries to do. Like, at the end of the day, she's a scout. She's got her person that she's going after, and she knows how to get there. And so she kind of, like, rolls her shoulders back, kind of, like, brushes her hair and, like, makes it look a little better, like she hasn't been driving through the desert. And then, for lack of a better term, like, struts up to the High Rollers table and kind of places her hand on her hip and starts to, like, try to make it look like she's perceiving the table, but is actually trying to perceive the people at the table.
Okay, so I'm going to need a few things.
Yeah.
First, I'm going to need a performance check.
Sounds good.
And given your background, I'm going to give you advantage on the performance check.
Okay. Beautiful. That's an 18.
All right, so you start strutting across the casino floor. And if there's one thing that's true about Glimmer, it's that she knows how to act like someone with power, money, and time. It's been a long time since you had really any decent credits or a bath for that matter, but when you want to, you can look like the baddest bitch in the room. And right now, you are the baddest bitch in the room. Yeah. You walk across the casino floor, nobody bothers you. You ascend the carpeted stairs to the High Roller suite, which, by the way, it's a dirt floor in here. The carpet only starts once you get to the stairs.
Yep.
You start to climb the stairs and you look to your left. You look to your right. And then you put your game face on and keep walking. You make it into the room. You pose nonchalantly like a beautiful woman just here to play some cards, place a few bets, and let's get a perception check.
Okay. I'm still, like, trying to, like, memorize my table. That is a 16.
All right, so the first thing that catches your eye is not anyone at the table. The thing is that you've spent a good portion of your life around this kind of person, the kind of person who has more credits than they have sense. What really catches your eye is what is suspended from the ceiling just outside of the suite. Hanging from rope tethers high in the air is a strange modular vehicle, the type of which you have never seen before. It's got sort of a longer front and a long center. It looks like you could fit several people inside of it. But unlike most of the vehicles that you've seen that are open air, this is enclosed. It's got these strange sort of glass windows on either side and a glass window in the front, and instead of sort of being propelled up in the air by any kind of levitators like you're used to on your typical speeder, it's got these large rubber sort of circles beneath it that presumably could propel it forward. And from what you can tell, the people in this room are gambling to win that item. Now, you're no archaeologist. You've never really cared about this sort of thing. So you just sort of, you note it as like sort of a passing fancy, the kind of thing someone incredibly wealthy would want to collect simply to own, and then turn your attention to the table. With an 18, you notice a few things. First of all, the vast majority of the people at this table are exactly the kind of person you expect to see here. Mm-hmm. There's a few humans dressed in like clothes that actually look somewhat new. There's no holes, no scrapes. The colors are slightly faded, but that's it. They're all clean, well-dressed. But oddly, also at this table is a Kinesian, dressed in rags, looking fairly destitute, a lot more like the average sort of Oasis citizen than anyone else. Behind them is, you always called them bugs, you probably shouldn't, a massive sort of human-like creature with antennae and an exoskeleton and wings like a beetle's that sort of watches you with vague curiosity, but your eyes skim past all of them to the very last woman at the table. Now, you notice her not because there's anything particularly notable about her. In fact, she's dressed more for traveling across the desert like you are. She's got tan, sort of caramel-colored skin, dark hair tied back into three long braids that hang down to the center of her back, dark eyes sort of lined with kohl, and dark clothing too, like the kind of traveler who only goes it at night. You notice her because she notices you. She has a deck of cards in her hand, but she's not looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking at you. And when your eyes meet, an eyebrow arches, and she looks at the seat next to her as if inviting you to sit down.
Glimmer arches her eyebrow back and walks over.
She sort of pulls out a chair for you as you approach, and do you sit down?
Yeah.
As you sit down, she turns away from whatever game is at hand, placing her cards in the center of the table and says, "I fold," and then looks at you. She leans towards you and says so quietly that only you can hear her, and just barely, over the sounds of the casino, "What's a nice northern girl like you doing in a place like this?" As she asks you that, Glimmer, for a second, you are not in a poorly run casino beneath the eastern oasis. You are in the northern oasis, just outside of it, actually, among the dunes and the cracked, packed dirt, standing next to a speeder for two people, with your things in a bag next to you, waiting. The person you're waiting for was supposed to be here at sundown, and by now the moon is high in the sky, the shattered pieces of it illuminating everything around you. And in that brightness, you do not see the person you're looking for. What do you do?
I think Glimmer immediately feels like something is wrong. She knows that this person would not abandon her. And if they are not here, it is because something bad has happened. And I think she, knowing what has been going on, like feels the feeling of like, you know, when you get so angry, you can feel it like in the back of your neck and the heat radiates out. I think that's what happens. And she feels just fury. And she turns around and heads to the people who have been having a problem with what's going on.
Glimmer, you head back to the oasis. You go through the underbelly, through the impoverished neighborhoods. You keep walking until you find yourself in front of a building. Not the building you meant to walk to, but maybe the one that you were guided to by something like muscle memory. You stand there for a few long moments, waiting for the door to open. Before you realize that it's holding open slightly, what do you do?
Oof.
It's hanging just slightly open.
I'm afraid immediately, because I think I know whose house this is. Immediately afraid, I walk in and survey what's going on.
You walk into the room and you don't even have to survey. No perception check required. Yeah. On the floor, in a pool of blood, completely unmoving, his eyes the same brilliant shade of blue as the sky before it rains, is Ash Valentine. Next to him is a bag, packed and ready to go. Two skins of water. And clutched in his hand is the note you wrote him that morning, telling him where to meet you and where to go. You take a deep breath. You can smell the salt and the iron in his blood. And then you are staring into a set of dark eyes, lined black with heavy makeup you don't see outside of home. Emotionless as they look at you.
I'm not a nice northern girl anymore.
Well, neither am I, and I'm guessing that's why you're here.
I'm looking for a mutual acquaintance.
I know you... what you're looking for, yes. I don't really have acquaintances, though.
I just need to know where they are.
What's in it for me?
I don't get mad at you.
I have to say, you're not nearly as scary as you've built yourself up to be. I know your family. Bunch of pussies, just like big scary dogs.
Glimmer goes, I'm nothing like my family.
Oh. Well, that would be intimidating if I didn't know why you're here. You know it's only soft hearts that get broken, don't you, Glimmer?
Call me a soft heart, but it's also a vengeful one.
Perhaps I won't call you a soft heart. Perhaps I'll call you V.
Hmm. Or Glimmer.
Well, Glimmer, it's nice to meet you. My name's Nyx.
Nyx?
Nyx.
Where'd you get that one?
Earth.
Yeah. Nyx, are you going to tell me? Or are we going to play this dancing game?
Maybe I like dancing with you.
Maybe I like dancing with you, but I don't want to dance forever. I'm happy to dance after I get the knowledge I need.
What if I told you I don't have it? And that you've been led right into a dead end?
I don't know if I'd believe you.
And I don't know who killed Ash Valentine any more than him do.
I have a hunch.
I have the name of the person who hired him, but not the one who pulled the trigger.
That's just as good. Almost better, I think. Maybe I could start there.
I don't think you'll like the answer.
I think I already know the answer.
And why did you come looking for it?
Justification?
Some would say that nothing justifies violence.
Those people are soft-hearted.
And boring.
Agreed.
I'd ask you how much you know of the Wynn family, but you might not be a good northern girl, but you certainly are a northern girl, are you not?
I was raised in that oasis.
So you know the Wynns.
I know of them.
Perhaps better than most. The man you're looking for. He's the leader of the Wynn family. And the other man you're looking for, he's a mystery.
You know nothing?
Not anything I'd give you for the price of you not being angry with me.
Fair. What would make you talk, I guess? You're insinuating that you do know more.
She puts up a hand as if to stop you, turns to the table, looks at the Kinesian and goes, you know, there's 1 to 500 odds on the little guy in the next fight. If you're looking for a way out of that debt. And then turns back to you and goes, Credits. Or we can just skip the middleman and you can give me water. Although, I wouldn't imagine a girl like you grew up knowing much about thirst. Maybe now, though.
I was going to say I've learned.
We all do, don't we?
To say the least. Why would I give that to you if I don't have a guarantee that you have the knowledge I need? Maybe it could be a gift after you share with me.
Ah. But that's not how this works, isn't it?
It could be.
So my options are either I do what you want me to, or you kill me and you never find out the name.
I am not going to kill you. Right now.
And you're not very creative.
There's a lot of people around.
These people don't care. Hey! Kinesian, you care if she kills me?
She's like,
give me a second. Okay.
Nyx turns away from you and looks at the Kinesian. Stacy, can you give us a physical description of your character, please?
Yeah, so I'm a Kinesian with white fur and yellow eyes. With
what's
red
a Kinesian,
stelera.
Stacy?
A canine humanoid person. particularly resembling coyotes is what I was told. But with white fur, yellow eyes, and red scleras. The left eye is covered with an eye patch, and there are weird burns and scars all over the body, particularly the left eye, left ear, front paws, and tail. And there's one pointy ear and one floppy ear, and the floppy ear has a tag on it, written with something on it. And I'm also wearing a matching vest to go with my eye patch.
Slay.
Tess, you look up as this human speaks to you. You've been sort of minding your own business. You're not at this high roller table by choice. You've sort of backed yourself into a corner where if you don't win your bet on this next fight, they're gonna be finding you somewhere in the body of, well, the stomach of maybe some large Calipatera.
You are currently
1,500 credits in debt. You're in the middle of a losing streak that started off as 20,000 credits in the black. Now, not only are you broke, you're on the verge of angering the wrong people. And Nyx is right. The odds against the little guy in the next fight are big enough not only to get you out of debt, but set you and the only person who matters up for life. You two are no longer in this casino, but sprinting across the dark, sandy plains of the wastelands, dust kicking up behind you as you, smaller pup, run on all fours. You can hear him cry with every step, hear him whimper, know that he is in incredible pain, that you were just slightly too late. And as you duck into a cave, you are forced to reckon with the fact that you're being chased by something much worse than the irradiated monsters that lurk in the canyons and mules surrounding you. What do you do?
Can I just start to dig, hoping to kind of like conceal myself as much as I can?
Yeah, you can go ahead and dig. God, what the fuck would digging be? Let's get a nature check.
Gotta old-fashioned it out. What's this? That's gonna be a 21.
With a 21, you dig a big enough hole, not only for you, but for the like young child who's accompanying you. And as you sort of move to allow him into this somewhat safety that you've dug, he looks at you and goes,
355? 355? Yeah, what's up, 081? I'm scared. And I think Tess at that point is just crying as much as, but she will try to hide that she's crying. And be like, it's okay. Just look at me. And we sit here and you don't have to look out there. I'll look out there.
Your eyes used to be blue.
Then don't look at me. You can look at, hold my hand. Hold my hand. And I'll hold 081's hand.
His tiny little paw comes to rest in yours, the like paw pads still soft and new the way that they always are for young pups. And I'm so sorry, there's a cat on my desk trying to knock my camera over. And a dog trying to break into my office. So if you're like wondering what all these noises are, I'm under siege. He puts a small paw in yours, and you can feel how soft his paw pads are. And as he looks up at you, he says, what are we gonna do?
We're gonna just follow the moon. We're gonna just keep going.
And you do. You follow the moon, and eventually you wind up outside of twisted metal walls. You leave him behind. You tell him to go find safety somewhere else. Places like this are rarely kind to people like you, people without a pack. You tell him that you'll find him, and when you do, you'll have something to show for it. But right now, you have less than nothing to show for it, less than nothing to show for abandoning him when he needed you most. Right now, you are 1,500 credits in debt, and the woman across from you knows it, which means everyone knows it, which means that Coleoptera behind you, the one with the big beefy arms, is probably just waiting to throw you out on your ass and turn your ass around. Would you care if she killed me?
Can I see what my hand is? Is it a, how's my hand looking? My hand of cards.
Give me a D100.
D100, I don't have that, so let me.
Give me a
D100. I have five D20s, okay. I'll add these ones up.
Okay.
Oh wait, this is so much math. Give me a
doing math so early.
You can also Google D100.
Okay, I'll Google D100, that'll be so much easier.
Let me just roll 5 d20s
and then add them up. What is this, 1982?
Okay. 84.
All right, you know, it's not the best hand of cards you've ever had. You're playing some kind of game that you never really learned the rules to. They just started putting credits down on the table, and you know, you're not compulsive per se. It's just that, you know, when a bet's made, you can't help but get in on it. You know, sometimes you've got to play the odds. And sometimes the odds play you, but you're pretty sure that this time, you're not going to be the first one out. You might have a winning hand here. In fact, give me an insight check.
11.
In fact, you're 90% sure, you've been counting cards, you're 90% sure that you have the best hand in the room.
I am going to respond to Nyx and say, well, I don't know, that wouldn't be in my favor, if you died, would it be?
I mean, it might be. I've been beating your ass for the last 87 hands.
87? You've been here for 87 hands?
It's a quick game.
Are you good?
She grins at you and gives you a little wink.
That's between me and the cards.
Well, you and the cards might be heading towards an annulment here.
Anyways, and I kind of peer over my shoulder. Is the bug person behind me looking at my cards?
No. Yes. You turn around, Cass, and there's a woman behind you, this Colipatera. She's beefy, she's big. Do, can you describe your character for us?
Yeah, my character is, as Jenny mentioned earlier, a giant bug humanoid kind of creature. She's got mostly a bluish exoskeleton with kind of hints of like a desert orange, you know, that kind of creeps along her forearms and legs, and then kind of a orangish belly. She's also got some tall antennas and some wild green hair. She is dressed in very, very tattered garments, not mm-hmm. too dissimilar from Glimmer, but wearing kind of a like crop top, almost sports bra-esque top that has a hood on it. And then some like, you know, kind of jogger-esque pants that are probably tattered and dirty at the end. She wears no shoes instead.
She found the remains of an Urban Outfitters and it's like crazy. Sorry, continue.
Listen, she's got to be cool if she's a bug.
Oh, yeah.
100%. 100%.
But she, yeah, bare feet and arms that kind of show off her kind of like pincher-like claws that she has for hands.
Hallie. You are here every single day. This is your job. Your job is to follow around the owner of this casino, the leader of the syndicate, one of the biggest assholes you've frankly ever met in your life, Condor Aurelius. Now, Condor Aurelius isn't really even in this room. He's off harassing the talent that's probably up next, the fighters that he'll never let you 1v1 because, God forbid, someone rip off his dear sweet Hallie's arms. You'd rather have your arms ripped off than spend another minute at this frickin' table. Your job is to make sure people don't cheat. And if they cheat, your job is to make sure they're the ones with their arms ripped off. You look around the room, as you always do, because you may hate your job, but you're damn good at it. You better be, because your life's on the line for it. And as you look around, let's get a perception check.
Yeah.
And Stacey, give me a sleight of hand check, please.
Oh, shit. 14.
Oof, okay. 14.
14. The same thing. You want to re-roll or?
So this is a meets a beats it scenario. So as you look around, Hallie, you watch as the Kinesian in front of you looks at her cards, sort of looks at you out of the corner of her eye, and your eyes land on her cards. It's a pretty good hand. You're not great at this kind of game, but I mean, you stand here for 12 hours a day and watch people play it. So you've seen some good hands. You've seen some bad hands. It's a decent hand. It's not great, but you've watched this Kinesian lose more money than you've ever made in your life over the last few days. So, you know, you think that maybe her luck's finally turning around. As you look around the room, your eyes sort of swing past Glimmer, Nyx, past the assemblage of other humans in the room. You think about why you're even here in the first place. It was a few years ago. Not too many, but long enough ago to feel like an entirely different lifetime. You just left the Horde, struck out on your own with your very best friend in the world, and you two had found your way to Eastern Oasis. The idea was simple. You were gonna come here, make some money, and as you walk down the alley your very first night, you spend some credits on some good, cheap, but not too cheap, bug liquor. Yeah. Which, of course, is the street name, but it's easier to order that than, you know, the Latin one. So, you two are a little tipsy walking down the street, and then suddenly, out of your corner of your eye, you see movement. Can I get an initiative roll?
Yeah. Ooh. It is 24.
Ooh, a 24!
Wow.
All right, so I'm gonna tell you what you see since you got first in initiative. Let me just pull up your character sheet really quick. It's dark here, but you're not a human. You can see in the dark. Sure, you prefer the light. It's nicer in the light. It warms you up, and sure, you don't like it when it turns on too fast. You tend to scatter when that happens, but you don't mind it much at all here in the dark, except maybe Lottie doesn't see, because someone grabs him. You can hear the cracking of his exoskeleton as an arm twists behind his shell, and you can hear him call out your name, strangled and tight. Holly! What do you do?
She's gonna turn in the direction of her friend and pull her axes from, I imagine she's got them around her waist, and lunge towards whoever has her friend in this sort of hold.
You lunge towards them quickly, fast. You're able to make contact. You see a human face, grizzled and scarred and furious as they hold Lottie down. And you get a chance. You can take them out right here. You can end this. You can stop them from hurting your friend any longer. You still have an action.
I'm gonna go ahead with my bonus action and just full force spin and like dual wield the axes, kind of one after the other, hoping one sticks at their face.
Your axe sinks into flesh and bone. It crunches, blood splatters your face. And whoever this assailant is falls to the ground. Lottie looks at you in horror. Holly, what did you? And before he can finish his sentence, someone grabs you. Lottie takes off running. And you turn to face the glaring eyes of none other than Condor Aurelius himself. Do you know how much you owe me now, kid?
I don't know you shit.
That's fair, but where I come from, we take a life for a life. And he grabs you by your antennae and drags you after him. Standing now in his casino, surrounded by the rich, the fortunate, and one truly unfortunate Knesian, you watch as Tess attempts to hide her hand from you.
She's, Hallie's gonna cross her arms, and as a Coleoptera, like, she's segmented, right? So it makes a little bit of a noise. Not different to like a subtle as her eyes kind of narrow in on the Kinesian, just kind of like head tilted, waiting for them to notice.
So are you gonna place a bet or what?
I don't even have anything to bet with. Let me see.
Well, I see two bottles of water on the table. Why not just up the ante? Throw another liter in.
I quickly, before I grab my liter, I look at Nyx and I kind of look back at Hallie too, because for some reason, 87 wins. It's not just my luck. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'll grab the extra liter and I'll put it on the table. And Tess will let out a big cackle.
I'm sorry, oh, I have, man, to take a screenshot. Go on.
You know I can't get away from some steaks.
Sure, I mean, dogs love raw meat. And then she goes ahead, matches your bet with a bottle of water, and then puts down her cards, being the last person in the round. And I need you to know, I literally just took a screenshot of this. I rolled a single D100, and she got an 89.
Oh, no.
She takes your water, pulls it towards you, towards herself, and goes, well, this has been a fun game, but if Glamour over here doesn't want to give me what I want, I'll have to pull out.
I look to her and I go, you got the water.
It's not yours. I would have got this water anyways. It matters to the Canadian with the gambling problem.
It does matter to the Canadian with the gambling problem. Do you not feel bad?
I have a question. You said there were other players at this table, right?
Mm-hmm.
While they're having that conversation, by any chance, can I pickpocket the closest one next to me?
The one next to you. Okay, this is what's going to happen. You need to roll a sleight of hand check.
Yes.
You need to roll it with disadvantage.
Okay.
Because you are already being watched by Holly, Holly's going to roll a perception check with advantage.
Okay.
The passive perception you need to beat to get your hands on this person's wallet is a 14.
Okay.
However, it doesn't matter if Holly catches you. So we're going to start with you. We're going to see what you roll, Stacey.
15.
All right. So you reach in and you get your hands, not even on a wallet, it's a credit chip. You get your hands on a loose credit chip in their back pocket. Holly, go ahead and roll those 2d20s for me. There's two perception checks.
Well, I rolled a nat 20, so.
Ooh, yikes.
Okay.
Ooh, not great.
So.
Nope.
Holly, you're, honest great to God, fight. This has been the most boring fucking shift of your life. So fucking boring. And then, out of nowhere, a furry paw slips into a back pocket.
Oh, hell yeah.
What do you do?
She's gonna like crack her claws and like rotate her neck. And under her breath, she's gonna be like, wrong choice, Kinesian. Wrong fucking choice. And wrap her bottom two arms like around the throat of this dog-like creature and haul them out of the seat.
All right, let's get a post athletics checks.
Alrighty.
As this happens, Glimmer goes, oh, that's aggressive.
Only a soft heart would think that.
I never said I didn't have a soft heart, Nyx.
You did. I was literally, we don't have to.
I said I have right a now. Soft and a vengeful heart. Thank you.
I thought you said ventricle heart there for a second. And no, I was like, vengeful. Oh, well educated and beautiful. I mean,
you know how I am.
Do I know Hallie's name?
You've been here a few days. I think you know Hallie's name.
Okay. Listen, H-Dog, you got it all wrong.
H-Dog? You dare call me H-Dog.
You got it all wrong. I don't know what you saw. I was stretching.
Oh, you don't know what I saw? You really stretching. Don't know what I saw? And she's going to like put her head like down and like lean in towards her ear. Well, if I didn't see anything, then you owe me half.
Slay.
I told you I was stretching.
All right.
I told you.
Hallie's gonna like loosen her grip and take like one hand and like pat Tess on the head and like kind of do like a quick little shoulder massage.
No.
Yeah. Well, my bad. Apologies.
600 credits fee.
600 credits I got?
No. 600 credits fee. I need you to roll a D100, Stacey.
Oh, shit. I need to just keep this up.
How much do I have on me?
With your background, you have about 500 credits.
That's what I thought.
52.
All right, you get 520 credits.
520. All
right. But if you split it with Hallie, you get.
I am splitting it with Hallie.
260.
But I got. Do I have to sleight of hand that, or like, can I do it later?
You can do it later. You can do it.
Not in front of.
600, or I'd be willing to part with a leader for the right information.
For the right information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the name, but I can give you a description.
Okay. Do you have a vague location?
Last seen in the Eastern Oasis. You're in the right area.
Beautiful.
But it was a few weeks ago.
It's, you know, I'm a scout.
Dark hair, scout. Missing a leg, I think. Doesn't let anyone get too close.
Works with anyone?
Lone wolf.
Known for that?
I guess as much as anyone is.
No name, no first, nice nickname?
Knight something?
Glimmer grabs one of her liters of water. And passes it over to Nyx.
Pleasure doing business with you, beautiful.
Pleasure doing business with you.
And as Nyx then turns to the now 260 credits richer Tess, she says, so what do you say? Taking those 1 to 500 odds on the little guy.
How could I say no?
And as you sort of put down a credit chip that really doesn't have much on it, you're just asking for more debt. We go even further into the underground, beneath the giant arena, the little guy themselves. Pippin, can you describe your character for us?
Yeah. Adrastos is a human fighter, and they're a bit muscular, but they just are not getting quite enough to maybe eat or drink as they should be. And so they're quite short for their age. They're wearing these, kind of drab clothes, like a baggy white shirt with a little gray vest on top, and pops of color with a they're fiddling with a neckerchief, a red neckerchief that seems to be brighter than anything else they're wearing. Like they've taken pains to take a little bit of care of it. They have dark brown eyes and dark brown hair, and they are a little beat up. And they look like are used to being a little beat up. I don't know where I am around, but they look tired and they're probably waiting on something.
Adrastos, you are seated on a crate. You've got your daily ration of water in one hand. It's not quite the full liter that you should have at this point in the day, but you've got it. There's bruises blossoming all over your skin. Sort of big red welt above one eye as two black eyes start to form in your tear ducts. And
It hurts. Your body hurts. You're not a particularly old person. You're still fairly young, but definitely not as young as you were when you first came here. And definitely not,
don't feel it.
Yeah. Definitely not as happy as you were. You live here, basically. You live beneath the arena. You only come up for the fights that you always have to win, because if you don't, you won't live anywhere anymore. And as you sort of look up above you to the arena floor that serves as your ceiling, you feel a soft, gentle hand on your knee. Pam.
I tense up, by the way, but
yeah. Okay, so you feel yourself look tense, and do you kind of like look for the source of this touch?
Yes.
You look to what first appears to be just a mound of dark brown fur. Cam, can you describe your character?
So B is very small. I think she's sitting at about 3.5 feet. And she's a little mole with nice claws. She likes to wear a knitted sweater, even though it's completely terrible to wear that in the desert. But she found a book from a long time ago about how to knit, and now she likes to do it just as a fun little way to fiddle. She wears this patched up like linen shawl, kind of akin to the kind of thing Stevie Nicks would wear, very art teacher.
Word.
That she likes a lot. Her hair has tufts of like white and red. It's clear she's getting a little older. And her most prominent feature, besides her beautiful star nose, which she's very proud of, she keeps it very moist, would be these goggles that she wears. And you guys would know that star noses have very small eyes. But with the goggles, they look absolutely huge. And they help her see. And they help her, you know, see all the little details and the things she's hunting for and all that fun stuff.
So cute. God, I'm so glad we have mole people. I was really hoping someone went for the mole people.
I would commit so crimes for her already.
So yes. Wholesome. Can we get a medicine check from B, please?
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to. Let me pull up my trusty old character sheet. I actually have expertise in medicine.
Ooh. Slay, I have a feeling we're going to need it.
I got you. Don't worry. Okay, roll D20. Okay. Oh, it's a 2 plus 8, and then expertise means I roll again with advantage. And let's see. Another 2.
So you got a 10.
10?
I mean, the thing is, Adrastus doesn't have... It's sort of hard to tell how they're doing when they immediately pull away from you. But this kid's fucked up. No one's taken care of this kid in a long time. They're definitely worse for wear. They've got these mechanical braces on their wrists, presumably to help support them after years of just constant physical abuse. And sort of as they pull away from you, you can see that their hands are sort of shaking, as if even those supports aren't doing enough. You can see from just your knowledge of tech that these are pretty worn out. They're not doing what they need to do anymore. And that basically you're witnessing someone who's living with a lot of chronic pain, probably much more than they should be at such a young age. This is your first time here. You sort of stayed away from this place, but something recently has drawn you here. And as you look up into the face of someone far too young to be this tired, you think about why you're here at all.
It's earlier in the day in your memory. The sun is still up. You've sort of burrowed around. You're cleaning off your paws and your claws in this tunnel. And you stop and look around. Can I get a perception check?
Yeah. That is, oh my goodness, I am rolling very poorly.
That it's is a DC 5 check, so you'll be okay.
It's an 8.
Okay, well.
For reference, I have a +5, so I've rolled 2 2s and a 3 so far.
Oh my god.
Oh,
okay,
no.
So you stop and you look around, and the thing about you is that, now most star noses can't see in the daylight. But in the darkness, they thrive. You, however, as you've gotten older, you've lost sort of the touch for seeing in the dark, but you formed a new connection to the earth, and you can feel when something moves or falls or touches it when you yourself are surrounded by the dirt. And your tremor sense activates as something small clunks to the floor just by your feet.
I'll go and I'll look and I'll try and pick it up.
You pick it up and you find, first of all, like a clump of melted plastic. You're quite familiar with plastic. A lot of the things that survived from the before times are made of plastic. Whatever happened melted it and warped it into shapes that it no longer was, but it's what's at the end of this plastic that's so fascinating to you. It's a sort of ring made of metal, and hanging from that ring is another metal object. Flat, with a long protruding segment that sort of sticks off in various directions. You have to hold it quite close to your face to examine it, but as you look at it, you realize that even though you might don't know what this is, there might be someone out there who does know. And you think you know who.
I will, I have my, like, wrist pad and stuff on, but that's separate from a comms device, right?
You can use it as a comms device, sure.
Okay, do I happen to have this person's information, or will I have to head right over there?
You think that if this person is awake and not taking one of his famous naps, you'll be able to get in touch.
Okay. I'll shoot him a quick message to see, and if he doesn't respond in 5 minutes, I'm burrowing over to him.
There's no response.
Okay, I'm burrowing over.
You dig a long, winding tunnel all the way back to home. What's been home for a long time. You find yourself in the crib beneath the underground market. And seated in the center of the crib, which is, in its essence, just a giant cavern that you've dug that connects to a bunch of other tunnels that lead to your nieces and your nephews and where they live. In the center of it is a giant pile of stuff. Some may call this trash. You call it treasure. Antiquities and artifacts from a time long gone, a time that the humans don't respect nearly as much as they should. The time that led to everything that's happening now. And in the center of this giant pile, curled up, is a huge, almost perfectly spherical, elderly star nose. His fur is like almost entirely white. Again, he's nearly perfectly round. Think Odin the dog in shape.
Damn.
And he huffs out a long snore as you enter.
Mr. Mechanic!
Yeah, I'm up. What's going on? He sits up. And he too has a pair of glasses pulled over his eyes, but they don't nearly magnify his eyes as much as yours do. In fact, they make them look even smaller, so that they just look like two black pinpricks beneath this like sea of thick warped glass. And he goes,
I'm up with Scorn, with Saffron. No.
He sniffs the air, sniffs it again.
Ah, feed. What do you have for me? Snacks?
Oh, it seems to be, well, I don't quite know. That's why I came to you.
Give it here. The, like, sort of, they're not tentacles on a mole. What are they?
They're claws.
But the things are, like, really long. Like his face.
The nose.
Little, like,
the nose?
Oh, the nose star things. Anyways, those his okay. nose sort of twitches at you as he leans forward.
Like a mustache. I don't know.
His claws are like too long now to even move them because he never moves from this spot. He goes, put it here. Let me smell it. Let me taste it.
I'll up to him. and I'll put it up. And I was like, here, it's plastic of some sort, and it has a bit of metal, and, well, to be honest, I don't quite know anything that it could be off the top of my head. How does it taste?
I know this object.
He sits up, and as he does so, you see that he's wearing the sweater that you made him that's just, like, stretched tight. It's sort of like a crop top, which was on purpose. You thought that he could pull it off, and he really can't, but the thought was there.
That's cute.
And he sits up and he goes, this is one of two.
In order to fully understand what artifact it is you hold, what power can be found in such a small object, you must retrieve the Odysseia. Yes.
Where can I find that?
They just dug it up.
Oh. Well, that sounds perfect. I'm sorry, Mr. Mechanic, you seem to be coughing a bit. Have you had enough water today?
What? No.
Have you? No?
No water stuff. That's fish bucketing.
Well, I have a liter, if you'd like.
No water, no water, no, no. If I wanted fish to fornicate in my mouth, I'd just let them do it.
Oh, Mr. Obsessed. Mechanic.
They just dug it up, you know.
Just did today? I see
a, yeah, no, about a year and a half. Two, 6 decades ago.
Those are very close times to each other, yes.
The scintillating people.
Scintillating people?
The scintillating people with the cards and the magic tricks and the David Copperfield.
Oh, I know. Magicians.
Yes, with the magicians and the cards and the go fish underground.
Casinos.
The Crazy Eights. Yeah, the Crazy Eight place. They found it down there.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never been there before.
The Odysseia. Well, here's the thing. If you want to be able to make use of that little doohickey you have there, you're going to need the other half of the thing. So maybe you're not that dedicated to learning about the world.
Oh, no, Mr. Mechanic, don't tease me.
I can't help it. You're just so gullible, so young.
You know, I appreciate your smarts quite a lot, but not when you're a smart ass.
Oh. Oh!
She laughed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what? I will take that liter of water.
Here you are.
And
put it up to him.
Maybe a cigar. You got a cigar on you?
I don't have a cigar, but I do have something. I learned recently how to roll paper properly, but it's with a different kind of plant.
You know what? Leave me with one of those.
Here you are.
You sort of skitter away to go try to figure out how you can make your way into the Syndicate's underground casino as this giant mole man hotboxes a underground cavern.
Hell fucking yeah, he does.
You find your way to the casino by means of posing as a tech expert here to assist with the medical needs of the performers, which, of course, isn't necessarily untrue. The mechanic is well-named, and he's taught you most of what he knows, which is how you can tell that this young person in front of you is in desperate need of your help.
What was your name again?
I'm not rudely, but I do brush their hand off and stand up. And I'm like, what's it to you?
Well, I believe that when you speak to someone, you should know their name.
And I believe you shouldn't touch people you don't know.
Well, if you don't want me to touch you, I won't. But I do want to offer my services. If you'll have
services?
Them. Well, I can tell that you're... Well, you haven't been serviced in a while, so...
Well, yeah, you got eyes, don't you?
Yes.
I crack a smile because I'm just like, okay, they're not going to kill... They're not here to hurt me, so...
I could help.
Adrastos, as you look at this tiny star nose...
Yes.
This tiny elderly star nose with her...
Someone sweet, who's shorter than me.
Yeah, quasi-maternal expression on their face. You think about the last time someone looked at you like that. You're 17 years old. In your family home. You're helping... cook. In fact, you are cooking. No one in your house really cooks anymore. Things have gotten sort of dire and... Yeah, you've been playing the role of parent more frequently than child, but your family's doing their best.
Okay.
You're cooking, and you hear a knock on the door. What do you do?
Like an outside door?
Mm-hmm.
It's open.
The door swings open. You can hear your mother from one of the bedrooms open a door and go to speak to someone in soft, hushed tones. Sorry, my cat's sneezing directly in the microphone.
I don't stop what I'm doing, but I make less noise in an effort to potentially overhear what.
You can hear them speaking. It's sort of the mix of both Spanish and English that you've come to expect in your home.
Okay. Do I recognize the other voice?
No.
Okay. It
appears that your mother is speaking with someone you don't know. And you don't get every word, but you know that it's nothing good. You can hear something about credits and time running out.
Okay. I will find a good stopping place and then like make my way over, not to interrupt, but isn't like to be an additional presence. Cause I guess that like in a concern for my mother.
You start to move towards the entryway of your home and your mother rounds the corner, nearly bumping into you. Behind her is a tall man, sort of scarred with deep-set eyes and angular features.
And your mother stops and goes, ah, mijite, ¿cómo estás?
Bien, you didn't tell me we'd have a guest. I don't know that we have enough.
We have enough, sweetheart. No te preocupes. This is a friend of mine.
I think to myself, I know all your friends. and I'm like, oh, all right. Pleasure to meet you. And you like give them a nod. Take a step to my mom.
Mr. Aurelius, this is my child. This is my child.
Mom, you good?
Everything's okay. We were just having a conversation. It doesn't sound like your other parent is going to make it home tonight.
Oh.
I'm going to go. I'll go get us something. I'll go take care of the things on the stove. You two get to know each other. And she sort of disappears back into the kitchen where you came
from. Yeah, I squeeze her shoulder as she goes through.
She stiffens at your touch.
Yeah. I show them. I do not expect this is a large. I think it's quite a small home.
Yes.
But I like gesture, I guess, to the living room, to like a place to sit. And I'm like, there's not much to offer, but is there anything you'd like?
Oh, I know. That's the problem, isn't it?
Isn't it everyone's?
It's not mine.
Lucky for you, then.
Well, my problem here is that you don't have much to offer, and I'm owed quite a bit.
What kind of value are you looking for? I know. I don't know who this is, but I know that my dad's not coming home.
Yes, well, he could come home. The tune of 175,000 credits, plus interest.
That's like more than the city's made in the last 200 years.
But it's just about what your father's lost.
I just look at him incredulous. I'm just like, there's on what in my mind? Where I'm just like, any chance you care to share how he racked up such egregious expenses? And I like in disbelief where I'm just like, you're kidding. Like you're blowing it up. I know it's with interest, but like
25,000 credits at 8% interest compounded every 2 minutes.
Oh, slimy. Slimy.
I have an old little like chronometer, a watch on my wrist that's old and speed up and half the pixels don't work. I'm just like, I see why you're not thirsty.
Oh no, I have all the water I could ever need. I take baths, long ones.
I look down and I'm like, can't say I know the feeling.
So your mom, she seems pretty upset that your father's not coming home.
Yeah, she's right to be, but
wouldn't it be nice if you could bring him home for her?
It absolutely would. But what, as you, like, yourself said, I apparently don't have much to offer you, in your opinion.
You're like, what, 5'3", 5'4"?
Yeah, just about. And I like stand a little taller because I'm actually like 5'2", 5'3".
looks at you and goes, we can get you some lifts. You do a lot of manual labor.
As much as any other kid in the neighborhood.
Yeah, putting stuff down. I can tell. So here's my offer, kid. I return your father in one piece, more or less, living, breathing, et cetera, et cetera. Make your mom real happy. In exchange, all I ask for you is that you pay the debt in blood instead of credits. Just maybe not your own, if you're lucky.
If I'm lucky. I look back at the kitchen and I like take a step forward and I'm just like, to be honest, I don't think she's going to be happy either way. But maybe I'll have more of a shot than he did.
He's certainly not a fighter.
Maybe not.
Not really a much of a gambler either.
No. I do like my odds, but never had good ones anyway.
All right, kid. Let's go. No time to say goodbye.
Okay.
You follow the man out of the house, and as you walk down the street, you can hear your mother calling, Mije! Mije! ¿Dónde estás? ¿Querida? And her voice echoes off the alley walls as you leave the neighborhood and never come back. This tiny star nose is looking at you with the same expression your mother would when you would trip and fall and come home with sand and dirt lodged in the scabs in your knees as a child.
Ouch. I go, I like raise up like my wrist and like look down at my ankle and I'm just like, what, these hunks of junk? There's nothing to service, love.
Of course there is. Everything can always be fixed.
Everything, and I just like to my, not even like to them or to her, but just to myself, of just like, yeah. Sometimes the fix is worse than what broke it.
Yeah, but
isn't and it? I sit back down, like no longer quite as on as like this isn't a fight, like this isn't bad. I'm just gonna sit back down, but keep my distance. Still,
are you fair allowing enough me to try and fix your stuff again?
Yeah, or at least I won't stop you from sitting down again.
Okay, I'll sit down with you and I'll kind of, I won't go and grab your hands, but I'll, yeah, like, you know.
No, but I'll like just show it off and I'll have it. Like, I know you're looking at it and just kind of be like, yeah, honestly, it's pretty useless, but you know, I was going to say that, better than nothing and yet, and I'm just like chuckling to myself.
A lot of that can be fixed, rather easily, actually. The rust, it's not from water, it's from blood, right? That's why it's so much redder.
I go, probably, but I'm not going to spend my little half liter on cleaning that instead.
Oh, well, you don't have to. I could take care of it. Is there an open container around here?
An open, like, just like an empty open container?
Empty open container. Just let me know how many gallons it is.
Yeah, let me. I'm gonna roll a D6 real fast.
Okay.
There is a 4-gallon sort of, it looks like it could hold water. It's like a welded at the bottom crate, like metal crate nearby that's open at the top.
Okay. I'll go over and I'll roll it close because I can't carry it. So I put it on and I roll it.
You watch this tiny bowl, like just.
No, I get. No, yeah. I'm like, no, I get up and I'm just like.
Oh, you sit down. You sit down. We're
and
fixing
no,
you
and
up
I just,
today.
I take it. I'm just like. Like looking at them. Yeah, just like, hey, what I'm here for, I guess. And like bring it over to us.
Wonderful. So as one of my discoveries, I took tech amateur. So I can, because of that, use condense / vaporize. It is a level one action. It's instantaneous. And in an open container, I can create up to 10 gallons of drinkable water. I can also produce a rainfall that falls within a 30-foot cube and extinguishes open air flames. I can destroy the same amount of water in an open container or destroy a 30-foot cube of fog. I can only use this once a day or once per long rest. So I'm going to go and I'm going to make 4 gallons of water.
MVP over here.
You may have just saved our lives.
I have to write a quick note.
I wrote it. Like,
God damn it. Hey, Cam.
There'll be
ways for
Cam
to get water regularly.
I love you. I love you.
As the person who helped them build this, sorry.
Don't apologize. Don't apologize.
Listen. When y'all said you needed a healer, I
y'all
said
did that.
I respect it.
All right.
This isn't even. I also would like to know. This is Jenny's thing. I can also burrow through unworked earth and stone, and stuff, and I can get water. From doing.
Yeah. You know.
I'd
rest us. This is like
I want to react to something. Yeah,
water you've ever seen.
I watch her do this, and like my eyes widen, and immediately I look around me. I try and see if there's any, you know, a cardboard, a palette, a something to cover it with, and I like look at her, and I'm like, the hell do you think you're doing? Do you want to get jumped? And just in disbelief. And then I like peek inside it again and close it. I'm like, no, that is not what I just saw.
Well, I wouldn't need to get jumped.
I wouldn't
be stealing. I'd freely give it away.
I come in closer and I'm just like, how can you do this? It doesn't matter. I try and go take her hand, but I can't do it. So I'm just like, I sit back down and I'm like, I think you need to be careful because I know that you have done this as a kindness and I don't think you realize where you are and what this means and how valuable this is. And I'm just like looking at it and just like, it's just a crate of water. It's more water than I've seen in like the last 3 months.
This is the most total water you've ever seen.
I've ever seen. Yeah.
But also, like,
Jenny,
is this
I'm
a
so
pond?
Sorry.
Is this an ocean?
This like,
is
yeah,
ruled
probably
and written.
Hyperventilating
this
the slightest bit because I'm like, I'm hallucinating. Like,
you
this
guys
is
are watching me rewrite
I've taken
this
brain damage.
Yeah.
I have taken brain damage. And I am hallucinating. Like, this is what it
is. This is what people describe
that like? I've had my bell ring a couple too many times. But yeah, I sort of start accepting it. It's like, oh, I look around. There's obviously no one else around. So I'll uncover it again. I'll just take it. I'm just like, this is not a magician, but I don't know what else to do with this person that has appeared before this like saint apparently is can just create miracles.
I'm sorry, so you're telling me that you like you invent Catholicism all over again? You're like, fuck.
Absolutely not. But why are you here if you're if you can do this? You know, in my mind, I'm like, what are you even doing here? So I do just take it off and that like take my brace off hand it to them. And then I fiddle with the bag at my feet, and I grab one of my canteens, and I look at them, probably looking much younger than I have in a while, because it's just like, may I?
You take as much as you need, sweetie.
It's like I fill it up, and I like take the smallest of sips because I'm like, I'm dead or dying. This is what's happening because it's not possible. So I do that.
So you fill up your water skins, and as
I'm very dehydrated,
goes to sort of start cleaning your braces, the ground beneath you begins to shake. And on instinct, you step back onto a slowly rising platform that brings you up to the center of the arena. In the high roller suite, Nyx, Glimmer, S, Hallie, you all look out the glass windows and see what must be the little guy rising towards the crowds, being deposited right in the middle of the arena. And from the opposite end, on his own rising platform, a massive 7.5 foot tall Kinesian, battle scarred, muscles so huge they bulge beneath his flesh like they might burst it open. And Nyx looks at you, Tess, and says, "Regretting that bet yet?" And that is where we will end this session. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tabletop Tavern Campaign 3
Wastelands.
Episode 1.
Woo!
They're back. These are my wonderful players. They've been great. Thank you for
watching.
Hopefully,
I will be back with exactly the same person. We'll find out.
I hope so. Oh my god.
No, the Spartan money is not on Pippin, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Hey folks, thanks for watching this week's episode of Tabletop Tavern. New episodes go up on Mondays at 8/7 Central on Twitch and YouTube. Podcasts go up Tuesday mornings. Please feel free to check out our other socials in the description. Have a great week and stay hydrated.